Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this chilly edition of Local Talk, a special edition in celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. Stay tuned for some inspiring thoughts and messages from some of the members of the committee that is putting together this evening's Martin Luther King Jr. celebration, along with a few more of our neighbors in Central Iowa. Talking to these folks and putting this show together really inspired me, and I know it will move you too. So stay tuned. But it's Monday, so a quick look at the weather. Today is mostly cloudy with a high near 18 and lows around minus 15. There's a chance of more snow tonight or freezing drizzle, so drive slowly on Tuesday morning. There is likely to be ice on the road. Snow and freezing drizzle will continue on Tuesday and Tuesday night. Wednesday is expected to be a sunny day, but Thursday could bring more snow. Friday and the weekend are expected to bring partly sunny weather, but temperatures are expected to stay in the teens and low 20s during the day. Nights will be, you guessed it, cold. Now here's Dennis Hart with a rundown of last week's Iowa news. All yours, Dennis.
Thanks very much, and hello again, everyone. I hope you had a great weekend. It was another busy week for news around Iowa, and we'll begin with the state's 4th District Republican Congressman, Steve King. The House of Representatives almost unanimously passed a resolution condemning King last week over comments he made about white supremacy. The vote was 424-1, with King himself voting to approve the measure and urging all House members to vote for it. The one no vote came from an Illinois Democrat who wanted to go farther by censuring King. All this coming one day after House Republican leaders decided to keep King off committee assignments after he had sparked outrage when he openly questioned whether the term white supremacist was offensive. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California said the move to deny King committee seats was designed to send a message about the GOP, and that King's comments were, in McCarthy's words, definitely not American. And White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders praised the move to strip King of his committee assignments and called King's comments about white supremacy abhorrent. King served on the House Judiciary, Agriculture, and Small Business Committees in the last Congress. The decision to strip him of his committee posts came as leading Republicans across the party spoke out against him. Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said, in his words, there is no place in the Republican Party, the Congress, or in the country for an ideology of racial supremacy of any kind. Republican Senator Mitt Romney called on King to resign. In a statement, King said the decision to remove him from committees was a political one that ignores the truth. And after all this, the Des Moines Register, the state's biggest newspaper, editorially urged King to resign. Meanwhile, Iowa Democratic Congresswoman Cindy Axne was appointed to the House Agriculture Committee, one of the committees Congressman King was removed from. Meanwhile, last week, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds was sworn in as the state's top elected official, the state's 43rd governor. It was a title the Republican inherited 2 years ago, but one she now takes as the state's first elected female governor. Earlier in the week, Governor Reynolds gave state lawmakers her most complete vision for Iowa since the election. Reynolds told lawmakers during her condition of the state address at the Iowa Capitol that action needs to be taken on issues that she and her legislative colleagues have been talking about, in some cases, for years. Among her proposals, a constitutional amendment that would lift a lifetime ban on felon voting rights, and another one that would guarantee crime victims' rights. Nearly $90 million in new money for K-12 education funding. A bill to create a children's mental health system. $11 million over 2 years for mental health services. $20 million for a workforce development program. Doubling workforce housing tax credits for rural communities. $20 million over 2 years to expand rural high-speed internet access. Also on the state legislative level, it was announced that Democratic Senator Nate Bolton will be assigned to 3 committees for this year's legislative session. He will serve on the Natural Resources and Environment Committee, the Local Government Committee, and an Appropriations Subcommittee on Transportation. This after some of his colleagues had called for him to resign following accusations of sexual misconduct. Bolton refused to quit, and the Senate Ethics Committee voted last month to dismiss the misconduct complaint because the alleged behavior took place before he was a senator. Also last week, word that a Republican-led effort to add gun rights to the Iowa Constitution must start over because the state's top election official did not complete a key step in the year-long process. Secretary of State Paul Pate confirmed that his office had failed to publish the requiring notifications that the legislature had started the process of amending the state constitution in Iowa newspapers. Pate, who is a Republican, took what he called full responsibility for the oversight, and he apologized to those who he said had worked so hard on these bills. Meanwhile, last week, cold weather pushed the third Women's March in Des Moines inside on Saturday. Hundreds filled the Iowa State Capitol for the rally, and dozens held signs expressing political beliefs and the need for equality. Guest speakers included Iowa Democratic Congresswoman Cindy Axne and New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who is planning to run for president. Also last week, nearly 40 Farm Service Agency offices reopened for Iowa farmers needing to process loans and get needed tax documents. The U.S. Department of Agriculture said it would call back to work about 2,500 employees nationally to help farmers with limited financial assistance starting last Thursday and continuing last Friday and through tomorrow, Tuesday. Also last week, word that Iowans who received food stamps were getting February's benefits early because of the federal government shutdown. Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits were available on EBT cards last Thursday instead of the regular February dates. U.S. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue had asked states to push up the dates when benefits are available due to the shutdown. While all this was happening in the wild world of politics last week, the Shopko Department Store Company announced it would close 9 Iowa stores because of financial problems. The Wisconsin-based company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy on Wednesday. Shopko operates 367 stores in 25 states. Also last week, word that the YMCA of Greater Des Moines will close the Ankeny Family Y on March 1st. The reason? Financial struggles and the lack of a long-term facility. There are no immediate plans to build a new Ankeny facility. On the crime beat last week, a Marshalltown Public Works employee was charged in federal court with transportation of child pornography. An FBI agent said a search of Jeff Rhodes' cell phone turned up about 100 images of child pornography. This after a minor in Oklahoma accused Rhodes of molestation. Still on the crime beat, authorities arrested a man who they believe shot and wounded a woman in Ames a week ago. 18-year-old Rodney Halterman was picked up in Greene County. Authorities said he meant to injure someone else when he pulled the trigger. A witness told officers Halterman and his intended target had an argument. Halterman allegedly pulled the gun and fired at that person, but the bullet struck the woman instead. And there was a strange twist to the Halterman story. Authorities in Guthrie County had received word that Halterman might have been at a home belonging to the mayor of the community of Jamaica and her husband. He was not inside that home, but the strong smell of marijuana was. And sure enough, deputies found 18 marijuana plants and drug paraphernalia inside the home. And Mayor LaDonna Kennedy, along with her husband Randy, were charged with several drug offenses. Also last week, a Des Moines woman was charged with attempted murder after she allegedly hit a man in the head with a golf club as a juvenile accomplice started shooting at him. 18-year-old Michaela Jeannie McDowell was arrested after she allegedly hit a 23-year-old man with the golf club. Meanwhile, an Iowa State Patrol trooper who was at the scene of a wreck on Interstate 80 on Friday was nearly hit by a semi-trailer. The trooper was in the westbound lane near Mitchellville during the middle of a snowstorm when the oncoming vehicle smashed into his patrol car. The trooper was not injured. Meanwhile, last week, police said a man who built a bomb at a downtown Des Moines restaurant claimed he did it to prove a point to society. 40-year-old Ivory Lee Washington of Des Moines said he constructed the improvised explosive device Tuesday just to see if anyone would stop him. Authorities said Washington told them people in our society don't care about safety and that he could build a device in public without anyone calling the police. Turned out, he was right. No one called reporting on his activity until the suspect himself notified police. He was taken into custody without incident. Also last week, a former state of Iowa worker who had used the words "in Christ" in his work emails lost his lawsuit against the state. A federal jury in Sioux City found that the State Department of Human Resources did not fail to accommodate Michael Mayall's religious practices. He sued the department and others, saying his firing violated his rights to free speech and religion. There was more last week, including word that Monica Lewinsky would deliver a keynote speech at this year's Iowa Women Lead Change Conference in Altoona in October. Lewinsky became a household name in 1998 after it came to light that she and President Bill Clinton had engaged in numerous sexual encounters with each other. At the time, Lewinsky was an intern in her 20s, while the president was a married man in his 50s. She is now a social activist. Iowa State's men's and women's basketball teams were in action last week. The men's team defeated Texas Tech 68-64 and defeated Oklahoma State 72-59. The women's team lost to West Virginia 73-64 and defeated Oklahoma 104-78. There are a couple more stories I want to tell you about. One involved a 7-month-old puppy named Rudolph. He was at an animal shelter that was so full, a veterinarian tried to euthanize him. But somehow, Rudolph woke up. And last week, he was safe at another shelter, King's Harvest Pet Rescue in Davenport, waiting to be adopted. As the folks at King's Harvest said after Rudolph's escape from death, God had a different plan. And then there's the story about 14 puppies who are lucky to be alive. They had been put into a feed sack lined in plastic and tossed into a creek near the Iowa-Missouri border. Two Good Samaritans found them and called 911. They were referred to the Animal Rescue Alliance in Mount Air, and from there, A. Hines 57 Pet Rescue and Shelter offered to take the puppies. Now those puppies are all healthy and eating well. And if that doesn't make you feel good on this Monday, probably nothing will. I'm Dennis Hart, and that's our summary of the past week's news around Iowa. I think I'll go out and find a cute dog to pet, but I'll make sure I'm right back here in this seat on Friday with news about what's happening in Ames. Between now and then, have a great week.
Thank you, Stevie, for getting this party started, literally. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this MLK Day special edition of Local Talk. And in Central Iowa, we are lucky to actually have a municipal party on this day. Citizens get together every year and organize a celebration. They've been doing this for 33 years. I found some of the people who have served on the committee organizing the event, and I asked them what it means to them to do this every year and how they feel on a very personal level about Dr. Martin Luther King himself. It's my pleasure to bring you some of the voices today from the committee who worked together to produce the Ames Story County Community MLK Day Celebration 2019 from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Ames Middle School. And after hearing some of the words and feelings from committee members, I'm guessing that you may make plans to go, if you've not already done so. You'll also hear from a few other folks who are not on the committee, but who offered their thoughts about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But let's start out with one of the earliest members of the committee for MLK Day. Here's Wayne Clinton, longtime Ames resident, junior high school and high school teacher, coach, county supervisor, and inductee into the Iowa African American Hall of Fame.
When I came to Ames in 1966 to start teaching, I was mindful of the civil rights period and introduced that into my classrooms to my students. I was a product of growing up in the city of St. Louis during the 1954 through 1968 time period, when the height of the civil rights movement, where Dr. King was the integral leader of that movement and the impact it had on America. And I would have to say that Dr. King truly is one of the special heroes in my life. He had the ability to galvanize a nation, particularly to focus on a cause that was so dear and precious at that time. Equal justice, equal rights, equal opportunity for all. Dr. King's vision was one of humanity, that if we treated everybody with the same rights and dignity, then all would benefit. So that is the thing that stood out most to me about his ability as a true leader. And I have always tried to emulate a lot of what he stood for in my interaction with people. My grandfather and sister both attended the march in Washington when he gave the I Have a Dream speech, and my grandfather, working in the union in St. Louis, attended the march in Selma. I was so active, involved in school and in athletics, and I knew right away that I didn't have the temperament to be nonviolent and peaceful if people wanted to physically abuse me in any way. So I knew that that wasn't something that I could do. But over the years, I learned that I could make an impact by being an example for others as to how I interacted with individuals in my lifetime in the community in which I live. But it took the 1968 day of his death that it impacted me the most. That day, I remember very vividly almost not going to work, but I got up that morning, I put on my black suit tie, went to school, and the kids looked at me and said, "Mr. Clinton," he says, "what's wrong, what's wrong?" And I says, "I don't know if you've heard, but Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated today." And I said, "I'm just very remorseful right now, emotional. And I just want to talk to you a little bit about what I think we have lost as a country, as a nation, as a people, because we need leaders like him to continue to move the needle for a more just cause for all Americans." And I said, "We've lost that at this point in time." And I said, "I don't know if we will see another person in my lifetime that will be as charismatic and able to accomplish as much as he's accomplished in his lifetime." And I went to my principal then, the late Don Carlson, and asked if I would be allowed to have an annual program to all of our students in seventh grade to talk about Dr. King, his life, his vision for America. So over the years, we had an annual program that we gave to our students, our seventh graders at the middle school. And then I started collaborating with Dr. Dwight Harrell at Meeker. And so we furthered the involvement of programs and services about Dr. King's life. And then George Bledsoe was very active through ISS to begin to bring programs to the community to foster the legacy of Dr. King. And then I served on that committee that was spearheaded by George for several years. Other people picked up the mantle and kind of carried that on over time. And then a few years ago, my wife, who was president of the local Ames NAACP chapter here, served on that citywide committee that is currently in place right now. So over the years, I have always looked forward to the continual celebration of his legacy that we had in this community with the Ames Middle School. And it was always something that held a special place in my heart of importance, and it's just a tremendous uplifting feeling, a sense of pride that is very difficult to explain. And then this year, they reached out to the commission, and so I was very willing and eager to represent the Ames and Relations Commission to continue to foster a more perfect world for all. You know, we talk about one of his statements, you know, "Our lives began to end the day we become silent about things that matter." And I'm finding that more and more now, I'm becoming more willing to just state a position on a particular issue, then let others either agree or disagree. We have a community now that I think is certainly willing and trying to be all-inclusive and improve relations in our community. So to me, this is just a natural opportunity to continue to play a part, and I look forward to being able to continue to do this in the years to come, because I believe this is crucial that we reflect on Dr. King and the vision that he had for this great country, especially in this day and time with all that is happening in our country in race relations. And I'm encouraging our community to come out to join the program at Ames Middle School. The committee has done an excellent job. We have young students there from Meeker and one of the other schools that will be participating. And every year, I think it's just getting better and better. I think that this would be a wonderful opportunity for the community at large to, again, recognize how all of us are in this together to make our community, our world, our country a better place for all.
Once upon this planet Earth lived a man of humble birth, preaching love and freedom far his fellow man. He was dreaming of the day peace would come to earth to stay, and he spread this message all across the land. Turn the other cheek, he'd plead. Love thy neighbor was his creed. Pain, humiliation, death, he did not dread. With his Bible at his side, from his foes he did not hide. It's hard to think that this great man is dead. Oh yeah. Well, the murders never cease. Are they men or are they beasts? What do they ever hope to gain? Will my country is it too late for us all? And did Martin Luther King just die in vain?
Last year was the 50th anniversary of MLK's death. And this year, 2019, marks the 400 years anniversary of the first slave ship that landed in the U.S. in Jamestown, Virginia. So that was 1619. Here we are, 2019, and the celebration on Monday. It's more important than ever that people come out to the celebration in our community, because the racial divide is growing. And we have to go back to the beginning and see what got all this started, and see how cruelly and viciously people were treated. Right now in our state, everyone is reeling about the racism that has been pointed out by the Republican Party and the rest of the nation, that we have the worst bigot representing us in Congress. Everyone knows that he is a racist. He's been voted in 9 times. What does that say about us as Iowans. Racism is evident not only in hateful words and actions like came from Steve King, but in silence and inaction, because we don't know and trust one another.
George Blitzos is the founder and chief CEO emeritus of Youth and Shelter Services and holds more awards than can be listed here, including the prestigious Aurora Excellence Award from the Des Moines Register, the Organizational Award from the Friends of Iowa Civil Rights, an honorary Doctor of Humane Letters degree from ISU. He has served many government appointments and was presented a Lifetime Achievement Award by Governor Terry Branstad. He serves as a member of numerous statewide and international groups and founded and serves on the Central Iowa Service Network Against Human Trafficking.
I don't think a lot of people know that I have always been a pacifist and really focused on speaking up and very oriented toward nonviolent change through passive resistance. I was raised that way. I can remember my mother, when there were spiders in the house or insects, she would carry them outside and let them go. She was totally against killing. She included animals in that and that they had to be treated humanely. And that's one of the reasons when we bought our farm and started bringing in animals, we were a rescue and sanctuary for animals. When I was a kid, my three big heroes were Dr. King, Mahatma Gandhi, and then Mother Teresa. So those were my three figures that I most looked up to and read everything about them, wanted to learn from them, dreamt about them, wanted to be like them. Dr. King represented nonviolent resistance. He learned it from Gandhi, and not only did I believe that Dr. King had the right message to overcome prejudice, he practiced it in a nonviolent way. He made many sacrifices, spent lots of time in jail. His life was always at risk, and in the end, his life was taken. So when Dr. King was assassinated, I was in school. We were taking a test. It was a final exam. And actually, the teacher interrupted the classroom and announced that Dr. King had been assassinated. I couldn't believe it. I was horrified. I couldn't move. I was so scared. And, you know, that had followed several other assassinations of people I admired who were trying to change the country for the better. It was a very violent time. When Dr. King was assassinated, it was a few years before I came to Ames to go to graduate school, and I was here doing alternative service as a conscientious objector. That's what brought me to Ames, and that's what led to YSS being founded. And 33 years ago, I wanted to be part of something in our own community to recognize Dr. King. At that time, there wasn't a lot of interest. It was, why do we need to do this? It's especially in the North. That's not us. And I still feel that. A lot of people who just don't think it's a problem, they look the other way. Vanessa is going to be the MC again this year for us. And I think she's going to talk a little bit about the history. If you want to hear it, come, because Vanessa is the one, I think, who's going to tell that. And she does a great job. I just remember vaguely the first meeting. It was over coffee, and I felt great because there were other people who were like-minded. MLK Day really demands that we recognize the racial injustice and how it's growing in our country right now. It's in the silence and inaction. And I think that's what kept reelecting Steve King. And the day to wake up is right now. Celebrating MLK Day is one way of us saying we recognize the racial divide and the injustice, and we're fighting against it. And Steve King does not represent us and never has. You know, my favorite quote by Dr. King is, "We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope." He always had hope, and he always talked about hope. And despite many, many disappointments, he never show despair. There were many, many failures along the way. A lot of things did not go well, but he kept that message of hope, and that's what we need today. And no one took his place, so we have to carry the banner. Silence is equal to being racist. We have to call it out. So it is our business, and that's what we're doing Monday, is trying to bring people together and give them hope. Because I think a lot of people are losing hope for our future, for our government, for our moral fiber and what we believe in. So let's rebuild. And I think that's one of the things that MLK Day does, and doing something in volunteer service or just coming to this event. Our legislators, they usually come, city council members. Last couple of years, we've had the chair of the Board of Supervisors. I'm very proud that Ames has this, even when they were very, very small. I've always been inspired. We've had great events. It gave me hope. You know, towns all over the country and in our state don't mark MLK Day with a celebration like this. We have to rediscover it and carry it forward. We have to join hands with minorities and people of color and immigrants and people who are refugees and any disenfranchised group and begin to have a conversation, begin to reach out. You can bridge that gap.
And he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think, 'cause we're headed for the brink. What will happen now that he is dead? He was for equality for all people, you and me. Full of love and goodwill, hate was not his way. He was not a violent man. Tell me, folks, if you can, why was he shot down the other day? I'm gonna say he'd seen the mountaintop, and he knew he could not stop. Always living with a threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think and feel again, for we're headed for the brink. What's gonna happen now that the King of
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. This is a special edition of Local Talk in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. We're featuring various members of our community's thoughts and feelings about Dr. King and about the celebration that is being planned at the Ames Middle School tonight, January 21st, between 6 and 7:30 p.m.
I went on Google and just started looking for African Americans pictures. And there were different articles and different stories and different, you know, things that people had written over the years. And one of them, there's a magazine, and it's called the Colored American Magazine. And I think this is from, it says 1901. It has a picture of a young lady on it. And the way she was dressed, she's in such a dignified manner. And the men are wearing suits and ties. People are very well dressed.
Aladdin El-Kathiri and his family are longtime residents of Ames, where he is a commercial real estate broker, KHOI broadcast engineer, and KHOI board member.
The one that struck me most was a photograph with Albert Einstein lecturing physics students at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, which is a black university. And Einstein usually refused to lecture at universities, but he had some very strong opinions about racism in the United States. So when Lincoln invited him, he went. And there's a photograph. I love this photograph. It really speaks volumes to me. What struck me was these young black men, I'm guessing in their 20s, they're wearing suits. I mean, nice suits. And the shoes are shined and they look really sharp. And they dress like this every day. You know, and African Americans, you wore the best things you had when you went out. You couldn't just go downtown and, you know, in just casual clothes. You had to look nice. And this was normal for African Americans. And even the content of what Dr. King spoke about, he didn't invent these ideas. He was brought up with these ideas. Most households were brought up with these ideas about how we should carry ourselves. It didn't matter how society treated you. I mean, that was a different discussion. Most of what we know Dr. King for, fairness, and how society were treating minority. I think Dr. King was speaking to non-African Americans or non-Africans in most of his the speeches that we are familiar with. Because Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was addressing what's wrong with society. And I think what was happening within African-American communities wasn't what's wrong with society. But one of the things that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. embodied, most African-Americans had from the time they arrived in the Americas, self-respect and dignity, you know, how we presented ourselves, how we approached the world. The community knew the children. If you're on a bus and there's a child acting, misbehaving, anyone on that bus would correct that child because it was a community. You know, we had to hold each other up and pick each other up and succeed in spite of whatever the obstacles were. When I think of Dr. King and what I'd like to teach my children or anyone, not just black folk, everybody, is when we listen to him or when we think about him, think about the self-respect. And we don't do that anymore. In fact, my opinion is that should be our role model, what we used to look like, what we used to do, compared to now. I mean, look at our current political environment, social environment. We've lost a lot. Not to say everyone should wear a suit and tie, but you get a different reaction when you look like you have self-respect and dignity. So that's what I think of a lot when I watch old videos of Dr. King and some of the marches. Look at how the people dressed. They didn't wear jeans. There were jeans then, but they didn't wear jeans and sweatshirts and to these marches where they were hosed and beaten and bloody. These folks were wearing ties and suits. It was like going to church. How Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. carried himself and how we carried ourselves, we African Americans, I mean, was very dignified. You know, walking around with dignity, with self-respect, is the first step in encouraging others to respect you.
I'm Andrea, also known as Dr. Indy.
Andrea Jenkins is Doctor of Psychology and works at Iowa State University as a psychologist.
I was reminded of a conversation that I was having with my dad last year, I think. My dad has lived all his life in the Georgia area. MLK is from Atlanta, Georgia. And so we were having a conversation a few years ago, particularly in the context of all the things that are going on today. And I had asked him, which felt better, or did it feel like we've made a lot of progress, or just how have things changed? Certainly, I'll say he did say that things have progressed. I mean, there are a lot of things that were happening then in terms of people getting beat up or killed or those types of things. But it was surprising to me to hear what was similar is just the amount of unrest that there still is. Both Iowa and Georgia had pretty big racialized pieces as a part of the election. This November, I was down in Georgia when the elections happened. I remember one specific news story that happened while I was down there is that there were a group of elderly people that were at like a day facility. So they didn't live there, but they went there during the day. And they always had buses that were people that would come pick them up to take them out on activities. And so the senior citizens that were there contacted and arranged for a voting registration group to come and pick them up and take them to vote. Well, when they went to actually get on the bus, the director or whomever, the people in charge of the facility, made them all get off the bus and said that it was not allowed, and all of this hoopla about paperwork and things like that. And this was primarily Black senior citizens. And certainly they were like, you know, we do this all the time with other groups. We contact them and say we want to go somewhere and it's never a problem. But when it was to go voting, all of a sudden it was a problem. Those are the types of things that are happening today. It's not being said as blatantly, but if you look at what's happening, it is still just as blatant as it was in those days. And so, yeah, in that time, it was about like interracial relationships. And there's still people today that don't want those types of relationships or mixing, and that we're still having those conversations. You know, I'm reminded of the comments by Steve King about repopulating with other people's babies, and just there are people that still think that way. And I guess I was just really struck by the similarities that my dad saw from living through that time and kind of what's going on today, and it being pretty similar, I guess.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and today is a special edition focusing on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday and the municipal celebration that will be held tonight, January 21st, at the middle school from 6 o'clock until 7:30. Another member of the committee that put together this event is Tim Garten, attorney and Ames City Council member and candidate for the Iowa Supreme Court. He is listed in the Chamber and Partners 2015 directory as one of the best real estate attorneys in Iowa.
I am a Christian, and the kind of church that I go to was on the sidelines during the period of slavery and Jim Crow and during the Civil Rights era. And I feel the weight of that. And so, as a Christian and as an attorney, I believe it is very important to be a part of the civil rights work as I can. And so I've been very involved with our NAACP group for several years and found that to be some of the most meaningful work that I do. And it's caused me to read and to learn and to grow in ways that I could not have anticipated. So perhaps it may be a little bit unexpected, but it's very personal for me. You don't have to be a person of faith to be deeply committed to the civil rights movement. Clearly, there are many people who are not people of faith that have been very instrumental in this movement. But Dr. King was a man of faith. He believed very much that the struggle for civil rights was a biblical mandate that we had. It's all through the letter from a Birmingham jail. And I am inspired by his view that God views people not based on the color of their skin. And as a result of that, it is imperative that we create equity and fairness in all aspects of society. So it is personal. I think Dr. King would not want us to focus exclusively on him. And when you look at some of, for example, the sermon he gave right before he died, he made it very clear that what he was trying to do was not about himself. And I think if we made the MLK event solely about the man himself, we would be missing the mark. So this is an opportunity for us as a community to sort of hit the pause button and reflect upon these important principles. For me personally, Dr. King represents the broader struggle for civil rights, and that's a struggle that needs to be celebrated for the work that it achieved in the 1960s. But it is also important that it's about the work that's going on now, right here in our community. As an attorney, I'm very sensitive to the disparities of African Americans in our criminal justice systems. We have 2.4 million Americans behind bars, and a significantly disproportionate percentage of those are African American and Hispanic. When an African American young man is facing a criminal charge, whether as a juvenile or as an adult, there's oftentimes not the kind of family resources to be of help to that person. Oftentimes their families cannot afford private attorneys, but it goes beyond the criminal justice system. When you come out of jail and you're living in a homeless shelter and you have no family and no friends, why should we be surprised at the recidivism rate we have? So we need to do more as a community to create structures to help people when they come out of jail or prison, to give them a path of hope, an opportunity for a second chance. And those are things, again, not far and away, but right here in Ames. Because I want you to measure us not based on the wonderful infrastructure that we have in Ames, and it's awesome, or the economic development, and I love that, but you should measure us based on how we take care of the least of these. And so there are challenges that our state is facing in the criminal justice system, in education. African American children are behind their peers in reading skills at fourth grade. That's here in Ames. We have to view these children not as someone else's children. We have to view them as our children. And what kind of future are we going to give them? One data point that's heartbreaking to me is that in the city of Ames right now, we have 100 children that have been identified as at risk, and they do not have a mentor. Now, I think that's crazy in a community like Ames. I have a vision for a community that has a waiting list of adults who are frustrated they have no one to work with. That's the kind of waiting list I want. It's 1 hour a week, and there are many days where that's the best thing I've done all day, spend an hour over my lunchtime at Cape Mitchell. Public service is valuable to the community, but it changes us as people. We deeply need to be connected with people outside of our particular socioeconomic silo. So, so important. It's not just about race. It's also about economic challenges. And this ties back to Dr. King, because I think Dr. King would want us to have a heart for those who are struggling. But we're far enough away from the events of the Civil Rights era that many people of our generation now don't pay much attention to it. So it's important for us to use these events to remind our fellow community members that the struggle isn't over. There are very important struggles that we have yet to pursue. In fact, in some ways, the easy struggles were won, like, for example, with Brown versus Board of Education. Now we have a different kind of segregation that's far more difficult to work through. So we generally talk about de jure segregation, which is legal segregation, and de facto segregation, which is segregation in fact. This subject is really so profound because the MLK event is not a partisan event. So I think events like the MLK celebration are a big deal, and I think it's very important that we have a great turnout. Last year was almost standing room only. It was wonderful. I love to see the children there. It is imperative that we share these stories with the next generation. I'm very excited about the program this year, and it truly is a team effort to put this together, and just some marvelous people talking about these issues, helping people to think about issues of civil rights today. And it's events like this above partisan politics that remind us that we are Americans first before we're any political party.
Please join the community Monday, January 21st, 6 p.m. to 7:30 at the Ames Middle School. There'll be birthday cake to celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. At 6 o'clock social time until 6:30. And I believe the program starts just after that. It should be a great program. It's a day off of work for many, a day off of school for the kids. One of the things around this is make it a day on, not a day off. Volunteer, get out there, do something for the community. And if you're not able to do that during the day, at least come join us that evening to celebrate this man and his message.
Eric Snyder is Community Resource Officer at City of Ames Police Department.
Last year I was at this event, and they, at the end of the event, I think at some point they asked for people who were willing to serve on the committee. And for whatever reason, it just struck me, if I actually want to put my money where my mouth is and do something, maybe this is a good chance to step up and start raising awareness about what this man did. I think there's a combination of basic understanding that I have, a respect for his work, as well as a hunger, I guess I would call it, to learn more and really dive deep into what he actually stood for and how that applies to today. I mean, he endured a lot, and the least we can do is spread his message. I grew up learning about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in school, and you heard his nonviolent civil disobedience, trying to raise awareness and change people about racial issues. It was a way that I wanted to live, and I didn't want to hate anybody. I wanted to love everybody. And it always struck me as something that we should be doing. But I can't say that I ever really did anything concrete. I guess there's a hunger to learn more, to talk to the people that are affected by these issues. But I think this connection for me, not only to promoting the event, but to the people that are also planning and promoting and will be at the event, I think will help educate me and make me better. After my job as a police officer over the last 3 years, after our presidential election cycle, we've had so much divisiveness. And we as a police department have been trying to bring people back together, connecting with more people and talking with more people. We may have seen our Donut Disrespect campaign, things like that, that we were doing to try to bring people back together, but they're all just kind of vague campaigns around respecting each other. We haven't really delved into the real issues through those types of campaigns. So another piece of this, I think, for me is some of the videos that I've seen or the accounts that I've seen, some of the documentaries and things like that, the way some law enforcement handled that, I almost feel like a duty to set an example going forward that that's not accepted. The only way we change those things is by changing our actions going forward. I mean, that history doesn't go away.
Right.
There's
yeah.
people that were alive then that are alive now or that have descendants. It'll never go away. But if at least we right those wrongs going forward, it just is history and it's not continuing. Not that I can right those wrongs, but I feel bad that some of the things done by law enforcement during that time were done to some of those people that were really trying to spread a message in a positive way about something that we should all be striving for. I'm not real old myself yet, and as I mature and as I look at these problems and how we solve some of these problems in our world, I see a lot of similarities to the way I think and a lot of the teachings that he did, and it just makes me want to know and learn more from him and to try to bring people together around a common message, and I think this is a good message that people can gather around. I think a lot of it is the roots in Christianity. I'm a Christian. He was a Christian. And his nonviolence and the way he applied that to this issue of racial inequity. Love one another is one of the commands, and that was a big part of his life. We should be loving and treating each other well, not fighting over differences that we have. And, you know, the color of our skin should not be what we judge each other by. I've always believed, always thought that you judge a person by their actions and their deeds and how they carry themselves. And you forgive each other when it's time to forgive each other, and you move on and you bury that hatchet and you learn to move forward on common ground. And I think that really strikes me, especially because he was nonviolent, because he endured a lot, probably a lot more than maybe somebody that would have gone to violence or been more willing to stand up and fight back. He didn't do that. And that's always just struck me as something that's very amazing. You know, a lot of Jesus's teachings in the Bible, Dr. King did those things. You know, he turned the other cheek. It's easy to say it. It's easy to go to church and talk about it. But to live it out in real life is a really big challenge. And in a lot of instances, I think he did. But I always just thought we should be doing more to honor this man and spread his message. And the committee does a fantastic job. I think it's probably the fact that I've matured in my life and in my faith that this last one struck me so much. But I thought I have to personally get involved. Otherwise, I'm just watching other people do the work. Like I said, I think it's the fact that I've matured over time that makes me go, I should probably be paying a little more attention to this. Yeah, I would say there's probably a small amount of shame in me that I haven't done it before now, that I haven't gotten more involved now to learn more about it. I've been able to live my happy life and not really worry about these things that much. And there's a little bit of shame in me for that. I actually, in a way, envy you a little bit for being able to live at that time and see these things. But this first year on the committee, I just kind of sat back and learned and listened to what everybody's doing. And I really wanted to see behind the scenes. And I don't have any intent on changing anything. I don't have any specific ideas, but I just wanted to start that process of getting involved to learn more about how this event works and how we mostly get the word out more. I want more people there, and I want more people hearing this message and actually taking it to heart.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I have been your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in on this Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. birthday program. On today's show, you heard the voices of Dennis Hart, Wayne Clinton, George Belitzos, Andrea Jenkins, Aladdin Al-Kathiri, Tim Garten, and Eric Snyder. Musicians that provided our beautiful music today were Nina Simone, Stevie Wonder, and civil rights activists in Selma, Alabama. Local Talk airs 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI 89.1 FM. Remember that you can also hear KHOI streaming live online at khoifm.org. You can also hear this show later at khoifm.org. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio. Happy birthday, Martin.